All right, we started in Genesis 1 this morning. We're starting in Exodus 2 tonight. Exodus chapter 2. The midwives of Egypt have been instructed to kill all the male children that were born. Some of them didn't do it. So in time when Moses is born, as you know, they came up with a plan, hid him in an ark of bulrushes and so on. And so along the line, along comes Pharaoh's daughter, has pity on Moses and spares him. Now, down in verse 11, this is 40 years later. It came to pass in those days when Moses was grown that he went out unto his brethren and looked upon their burdens, and he spied an Egyptian smiting an Hebrew, one of his brethren. And he looked this way and that way, and when he saw that there was no man, he slew the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. And when he went out the second day, behold, two men of the Hebrews strove together. He said to him that did the wrong, "Wherefore smitest thou thy fellow?" He said, "Who made thee a prince and a judge over us? Intendest thou to kill me as thou killedst the Egyptian?" And Moses feared and said, "Surely this thing is known." Now when Pharaoh heard this thing, he sought to slay Moses. But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. Let's bow our heads and pray. Well, Father, come back to you once again tonight. Glad to be able to stand once again and preach. And Father, glad for folks that come out to hear it. I pray that you'll bless it to our hearts tonight. Lord, we have pretty much placed our anchor upon the fact that these words are not the words of men, but the words of God. And so we come to you tonight for instruction. We come to hear your voice. And I pray that you might help us tonight in some things. And maybe you can comfort some parents' hearts in some things. Maybe you can clarify something for children as well. I don't mean always little children, but also grown children. Pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. So you see the beginning of Moses' life, and then you suddenly skip forward down in verse 11. He's now 40 years old. Moses, as you know, you can figure this out from Deuteronomy and Acts chapter 7, Deuteronomy chapter 34. Moses died at 120 years. And his natural force was not abated, his eye was not dim. Moses' life divided neatly into thirds. He spent a third of his life, the first 40 years in Egypt, spent the second third of his life, 40 years in Midian, and then spent the next 40 years of his life in the usefulness to God in leading the children of Israel, both out of Egypt and through the wilderness. Now, that first two-thirds of his life, that first 80 years, was spent getting prepared to really be used. I'm sure he thought that he would be used much sooner, but it turned out that God didn't get him to a burning bush and get him on his face before a burning bush until he was 80 years old. The time prior to that was spent in Egypt, 40 years, then in Midian, 40 years, and undoubtedly that second 40 years in a good bit of confusion and frustration because it becomes apparent later that Moses felt sure that God would use him at 40 to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt. But that wasn't how it worked out. At 40 or 50 or 60 or even up to 80, Moses would have been considered a failure by the Egyptians. He would have been considered a failure by the Jews as well, because so far he hadn't done nothing. And so it took 80 years, two-thirds of Moses' life, to get him and the Lord on somewhere near the same page. Now, again, dividing his life into neat thirds, 40-year divisions. Works pretty good for a 75-year-old man. That's a neat 25 years. So the divisions have been shortened, but it works pretty good for them. So keep those numbers in mind just a little bit. We'll go back to those proportions more a little bit later in the evening. But at that point, you know, Moses is 80 years old, and you'd think, I mean, if we're using 25-year divisions for us, then the guy is two-thirds of the way through his life. He's 50 years old, roughly, perhaps 60, roughly. And that kind of seems a strange time for God to start using somebody. But whatever's the case with Moses, that starting at 80, he really finished strong. And starting at that time, he became one of the top two or three. I mean, not that they should be ranked, but you know, you talk about, who do you talk about the patriarchs of the Old Testament? You think about Abraham, David, and Moses, or something along those lines, but one of the top two or three, three or four guys in the Bible in the Old Testament, except for the Lord himself. So how does a guy wind up in the top three? How does a guy wind up at such an exalted position as far as reputation and usefulness as Moses did? And that's something I hope to look at just a little bit here tonight. All I know is that as time goes by, I get more and more intrigued by how the Lord builds men and how he'll take a guy and put him through some things, allow him to go through some things. And a lot of times the guy's only aware he's going through things. He's not aware that the Lord is involved in any way. And yet, and almost always the guy thinks, man, it's been a really long time since I've been going through this. And then once in a while the Lord does that and the guy comes out and is very useful. And like I said, Moses, it took the Lord 80 years to get Moses to a place where he could kneel before a burning bush and be mandated to go do what he did. And so the last 40 years of Moses' life was very useful. Now, 40 years prior to that, he's only 40 years old then. He's standing over the grave of a dead Egyptian that he killed, and Moses is useless. Now, he didn't think he was useless. After all, he was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians. After all, maybe he was the wrestling champion of all the Egyptian household. Maybe he had a letter jacket or something, you know, and had a master's degree. And, you know, you would have thought, nobody would have thought that Moses said, why wouldn't they follow me? After all, I'm a Hebrew. And yet, standing there over that Egyptian's grave, to the Lord, Moses was useless at that point. So we're talking here about a journey from uselessness to usefulness. And so I want to preach to you this tonight, and there may be more to follow, well, not next Sunday night, but the Sunday after maybe, on the making of Moses. I'm intrigued by how God builds men. You know? This sermon is about God getting Moses through the first two-thirds of his life to a burning bush, gets him on his face there, and from that point on, Moses is useless, or is useful. Up to that point, he's useless. Now, starting early in this story, Moses is an Israelite, so he's saved. He's as saved as somebody could be in the Old Testament. It's not the same as New Testament salvation, but he was saved as somebody could be in the Old Testament. And yet, standing over in the height of his life, probably never stronger, more athletic, sharper would he ever be than when he was 40 years old. You know, that kind of equates with our, you know, 25 to 30-year-olds, vigor and youthfulness and athleticism and strength and all those things, flexibility and all that stuff. And yet Moses was useless there. And so I want to talk to you about that here for a little while. Maybe this answers some of the questions that, you know, parents want to know whether their kids are going to grow up and be able to do something for God. And it'll all depend on what, how they come out on the potter's wheel, you know. A man despairs over whether the Lord will ever use him and do something with him. Maybe he wants to be used. And it's going to depend on how he comes out of the potter's wheel and these, in Moses' case, these thirds of life. Maybe it's not quite thirds for us, but nevertheless, the wife watches and wonders why her husband's going through so many things and maybe why she's going through some things. Well, I'd like to talk to you about the making of Moses. The saying is that Rome wasn't built in a day, and neither is a man. Right? There were some issues that were at hand before. There were some impactful things that got Moses to the place where he knelt at that burning bush, and God says, okay, now's the time. And so I'd like to point some things out to you. And starting in Exodus chapter 2, let's start with this, verse 1. And there went a man of the house of Levi and took to wife a daughter of Levi. And the woman conceived and bare a son, and when she saw him, that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months. And when she could no longer hide him, she took for him an ark of bulrushes and daubed it with slime and with pitch, put the child therein, and she laid it in the flags by the river's brink. And his sister, that would be Miriam, stood afar off to wit what would be done to him. And of course, at that point, the daughter of Pharaoh comes down to wash herself at that river, and her maidens walked alongside by the riverside. And when she saw the ark among the flags, she sent her maid to fetch it. And when she had opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the babe wept. She had compassion on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." She said to the sister of Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call to thee a nurse of the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for thee?" And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go." And the maid went and called the child's mother. All right. First thing you see, the first 3 or 4 verses there in the making of Moses is the prudence of family. That is, a mother and a father, and in this case, a sister. It's fair to say that God begins building a man through his parents, through his family. That's a fair saying. This building of this man begins with protection and nurture and training. Now, a lot of times you find that the protection and the nurture and the training is not all that it should be. Sometimes you find that parents don't do all they could or all they should. Sometimes the parents don't have any sense, right? And so there's a variable there. But Moses' parents did all they can. They did all they could. They hid him as long as they possibly could, verse 3. They built an ark and put him in God's care, verse 3 and 4. Miriam stands to the side after the plan is in place and hopes that she might be able to help direct the events. And sure enough, Pharaoh's daughter sends one of the maids to talk to her, Miriam, Moses' older sister, to say, you know of a Hebrew woman that could nurse the child? Well, as a matter of fact, I do. And so as it turns out, Moses' mother got to nurse him. Now, she didn't get to rear him, she didn't get to raise him, she didn't get to train him, but she still had an influence in his life. And it's not all it should be, but it's all it could be. The parents did the best they could. This turned out to be a pretty good plan. It's better than being dead. It turns out to be a good plan. And the Lord used the plan. And God uses oftentimes what prudent parents do. Now, it's kind of funny because thinking about the history of the church and stuff, it was, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, that all of us were running around, a bunch of us were running around here, and we were 20 years younger, and so were our kids. There were a bunch of crumb crunchers and rug rats and 6 and 7 and 8 year olds. And we were all nervous as a bunch of long-tailed cats in a room full of rocking chairs about how this thing was going to work out with raising our kids. And so we were all on edge, And I don't know how mine turned out the way they did, knowing who their father was. but the point is, God uses what prudent parents do, and so it behooves parents to be as prudent as possible. Used Miriam, used the plan. That means that a big brother or big sister can have a major influence, youngins, in younger kids' lives, their brothers and sisters' lives. And, you know, the thing with this is there's a balance to it. Because these days, you look around, and what you look around and see is not good, because often parents have no foresight, no prudence, no wisdom, no foreplanning. They don't know how to train a kid. They don't want to learn how to train a kid. The government's told them they shouldn't train the kid the way the Bible says they should train a kid. And so generally speaking, kids are kind of left to raise themselves and drive their mothers crazy at Walmart. You know, the kid's in control all the way through to Walmart. And the parents just have to hope the best they can. Now, if you're a Christian parent, you've got to do better than that. The problem is, the balance is, there's no guarantees. Everybody here knows somebody that did everything as right as they could do it, and the kid still didn't turn out the way they wanted. And so the other side of that thing is that a prudent parent, a biblical parent, somebody that wants the best spiritually for their kid has to understand they don't control everything. And when you look at Moses' life, you cannot shelter your children from hardships and the alienations of life. You can keep them home and school them, and well, you should. We did all 4 hours, okay? And so I'm all for it. I'm all for all the protections that need to be put in place. But the fact of the matter is, you know, nobody could have helped the law that Pharaoh put through whereby the men's children were to be killed. And gratefully, Moses didn't die, but him not dying meant he was going to be reared somewhere else after his mother weaned him. You can't protect a kid from losing a parent to cancer young. You can't protect a kid from what might happen because of a bankruptcy or something like that. You just can't protect the kid from everything. You can keep him out of public school, you can, but you can't always keep him out of the hospital. Know what I'm saying? Say, what's the point, Brother Stevens? Well, you cannot shelter your kid from the hardships of life and sometimes alienations that come through life. You don't control, there are some things you don't control. And so in the end, you have to come to the grips with the fact that, you know, you have a measure of control early on in your life, in their lives, but by the time Moses is 40, his parents are out of the picture. If your kid grows up to be 18 or 20, and or 22 or 24 and is still coming to you and looks to you for some guidance, you should count your lucky stars and thank God. Because when you first have them, you're the boss. But by the time they're 18, 20, 22, they don't have to listen to you. And you become an advisor, and if they come to you for advice, you should count that a blessing. But you don't get to command nothing. You say, what's the point, Brother Stevens? Well, the point is that your part is crucial early. Any influence you have later is a blessing. But in the end, it's God that builds a man. And for that matter, a woman. It's God that does it. Moses, when he turned 40 years old, here in Exodus 2, down in around verse 11, when he kills this Egyptian, he's 40 years old. Moses is angry. He's a murderer. He's rejected. He's a failure in a bunch of people's sight. He's well educated. And like I said, he may have the letter jacket by which he won the wrestling championship in, you know, Egypt College. But he hasn't got anywhere in life yet. He's exiled. He's alienated. Moses at 40, it isn't looking very good for him. And he has some negative stuff going his way. It doesn't look like God's working very well. So I'll say this. Moses at 40 is you at 25. I can say this. Because I started this with the prudence of family. at 25, it's not your parents' fault anymore. And that may come across kind of harsh and gritting my teeth and all that, but do you realize how many people are absolutely bogged down in a rut in life at 40, still living in the past? They may still be living in their mother's basement, and they're still blaming their parents for things that happened to them and for why it's wrong with them. At 25, it's now your fault. At 25, your parents can't carry your water anymore, and they shouldn't have to. If there's something bad that happened, and there are some plenty of ugly things in life that happened, I would only point you to some folks that overcame some ugly things. Because at 25, your parents aren't going to be able to dig you out and make God use you. At 25, you're responsible for getting yourself to a burning bush and God being able to use you. So Moses stands at 25, at 40 years old, our 25, roughly speaking. Maybe it's 30 for us, I don't know. People live a little older these days, but if you're going to live to be 90, then a third of the way is 30. If you're going to live to be 75, then a third of the way is 25. If you're going to live to be 85, you're going to have to do the math. But your family only carries you so far. So, but first of all, it's just reasonable to say part of the building blocks of a man is what his parents put into him. That influence is variable depending on how much he takes and how much he assimilates and how much he nourishes it and the effects of those things. But I just know that at 25 years old, bud, it's not your parents' fault anymore. Shut up. Quit blaming them. It's you. It's all you. It's all you. If you're in prison, it's your fault. If you got trouble with the law, if you're on dope, it's your fault. It's not their fault. You say, but Dad was mean. Shut up. It's your fault. Your dad didn't take the dope. You did. Right? Okay. Next. Then there steps in another influence in building a man. And the Lord allowed this. The Lord plainly used this. Verse 5. The daughter of Pharaoh came down to wash herself at the river, and her maidens walked along by the riverside. And when she saw the ark among the flags, she sent her maid to fetch it. When she had opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the babe wept. And she had compassion on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." Then said his sister to Pharaoh's daughter, Miriam standing right there, is happy to volunteer services. "Shall I go and call to the nurse of the Hebrew women? I might know one, I'm not sure, but I can probably find one." Turns out to be Moses' mother, amen? "That she may nurse the child for thee." And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go," and the maid went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, "Take this child away and nurse it for me, and I will give thee thy wages." She got paid for it, too. Never mind that. Getting paid to raise kids. That's... I don't want to go there. That'll make me mad. Verse 9. And the woman... I know y'all didn't get that, but that's all right. "And the woman took the child and nursed it, and the child grew. She brought him into Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she called his name Moses, and she said, 'Because I drew him out of the water.'" Now, you'll see there, after the prudence of parents, you'll find that one of the building blocks for the man, Moses, that God used was the assistance of the heathen. These are Egyptians. Like it or not, Pharaoh's daughter had a positive influence on Moses. And Pharaoh's household and all the staff in Pharaoh's household was part of the making of the man, Moses. Okay? He was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians in Acts 7. He was mighty in words and deeds, I believe, in Hebrews. But the point of the fact is that the heathen had their hands in the making of this man who became one of the greatest men of the Bible. Part of the fabric of Moses' life was the kindness and the compassion of Pharaoh's daughter. The influences, both good and ill, the luxuries of the palace in Egypt, the successes in his words and deeds that he'd done that the Egyptians equipped him with. He well may have been dead without the assistance of the heathen, right? And I say that to say that, like I said, we homeschooled all four of our kids all the way through, and we did what I think good parents should, which is to, in a measure, protect them from outside influences. They didn't get a chance. They didn't watch any TV they wanted to watch. They didn't watch any movies they wanted to watch. They certainly didn't listen to any music they wanted to listen to. Just any music. They listened to music that I wanted them to listen to. You say, well, they might have snuck off. Well, they may have, but I never caught them because I would have pounded them if I had. You say, what's the point? But the fact of the matter is, still, there are influences among the heathen that I have to say benefit sometimes. I'm not saying that you should go to them for answers, but whether it be a kind employer or a teacher or some sort of role model that may not be saved but still is a good enough man, maybe a parochial school nun or, for that matter, a kindly priest that didn't get off into nonsense, I can say that probably one of the influences in my life that was strongest was my high school coaches. I was a four-sport athlete in high school. We had a small enough high school that I could play four sports. And a couple of those coaches, you know, they still thought that they were pros or something because it was serious business. And sometimes I didn't like them too much, but they probably did more for me, for my character, than a lot of Christians that I had around me. You say, what's the point, Brother Stevens? Well, you simply have to acknowledge the assistance of the heathen. A lost friend might be a good influence, probably not all the way through. Maybe you got counsel. Maybe, you know, once in a while somebody goes to the armed services, a Marine or whatever, and a lot of times the kid's ruined because in the Marines you'll either sink or swim. But sometimes you go to the Army or the armed forces and the right Marine or the right DI gets a hold of them early, takes them a little bit under their wing, and sometimes the guy comes out of the Army a better man than he was when he went in. And again, I'm trying to point out to you the things that helped build Moses. And you have to admit that one of the influences in Moses' life were the heathen. Just I know it's, you know, for independent Baptist Bible believing homeschoolers, it's just hard to admit that. But somewhere along the way, somebody's going to get influenced by someone probably who's not saved. And sometimes it's not the worst influence in the world. Now, there's a minefield there. The minefield is that Egyptian assistance is still Egyptian in nature. You got to be real careful because you can sink in that quicksand real fast. When you start going back to the Egyptians for all the answers, now you're in trouble, right? The assistance of the Egyptians, the compassion of Pharaoh's daughter, and Moses' success educationally and whatever other mighty deeds he did. We're not told what those deeds were in Egypt. I don't know if he won the lion hunting contest or exactly what. Maybe he was a swordsman and won the swords competition. I'm not quite sure. But whatever those were, those influences are still not the truth. You know, if you find somebody in the world that's teaching or advising 70% truth, there's still 30% error involved. So that can be a real, you know, sand pit. Moses, that's real important. This is important for Christians. This is important where a Christian is influenced by a compromising Christian. Somebody that isn't what they should be. Somebody who didn't get it right. Like Billy Graham. Lead a bunch of people to Christ. Thank God for it. Beyond salvation, he didn't do squat for a bunch of people. You have to grow beyond Billy Graham. Okay? And somebody that helped you learn a little Bible and get a little bit of something substantive under your belt for a family, praise God for their help. But the fact of the matter is that there are a lot of folks that have about 70% truth and 30% error. And you need more truth than that. You say, you're applying that to Christianity. Yeah, I am, because whatever is the case, Moses had to grow beyond Pharaoh's daughter's compassion. He had to grow beyond the influence of whatever of Pharaoh's staff was there that took him under their wings and cared for him and consoled him and taught him and nurtured him and all those things. I don't know who trained him. We don't know those things, but somebody there had a positive influence because God used the influence. But still, Moses came to a day when he had to walk away from Egypt and reject Egyptian wisdom because he needed God's wisdom. And so what I'm saying is that where it's true the heathen do assist at times, there was an influential coach. There was an influential counselor in high school. There was a Christian teacher that helped you along, but unfortunately, 20 years later, he's off into heresy. Okay, well, you have to leave that behind. You have to acknowledge that he helped you as much as he helped you, and then you have to grow beyond him. Does that make sense? Moses had to grow beyond his successes in the heathen land. And so you have, first of all, the prudence of family, then you have the assistance of the heathen. Both those things helped make Moses. It helped get Moses to a burning bush where God put him wholesale in the will of God and used him for the rest of his life. Now, the next thing I wanted to point out to you, if you this time keep your finger in Exodus, go over to Acts chapter 7. Acts 7. Now, I'm talking about this because you ought to be intrigued, mother, father, sister, brother, and for your if you're a young person, or for that matter, a middle-aged person, and you know the Lord still has something for you in the future, but you don't know what exactly it is, you ought to be intrigued where the Lord gives you a relatively lengthy view of how he builds a man, especially when that man becomes a Moses. Who was as used as Moses was used. You ought to be intrigued by that. Now in Acts chapter 7, down in verse 25, you find this, and this is among some other stuff that was said about Moses. In verse 24, and seeing one of them, one of the Hebrew children suffer wrong, he, Moses, defended him and avenged him that was oppressed and smote the Egyptian. For he supposed his brethren would have understood how that God by his hand would deliver them, but they understood not. Now notice it says that he supposed that they would have understood how that God by Moses' hand would deliver Israel, but they understood not. Now, you can see there that that's basically saying that Moses understood. I don't know. I guess God co-told him that Moses understood that he would be the deliverer of Israel. And so here he stands at 40 years old in the height of his manhood and the strongest he will ever be and the most supple and sharp as he'll ever be and has the wisdom of the Egyptians under his belt and has his letter jacket on. He thinks the day has arrived. Follow me. Only the day hadn't arrived. You say, what is that about? That's about the will of God. It's about the will of God. You see, it looks like the Lord had told Moses, I'm going to use you to lead them out one day. It's my will that you lead them out one day. Now, we just talked about the prudence of family. We just talked about the assistance of the heathen. You know it's possible that God can make a man without those two things. There are some folks that have had some awful bad parents. And there had been some folks that have failed miserably in the world. And God still used them. Think about David Spurgeon. I mean, he didn't excel under his parents' tutelage. And when he got to the world, he made some awful decisions and wound up with a bunch of killers and dope heads. Correct? Is God using him? Well, then God can overrule those two things. Think about Dr. Ruckman. Lost parents, right? And then think about where he was in the world. Made a mess, terrible mess. Did God use him? Okay, then God can build a man without those first two things. Now, those first two things should greatly help somebody. They should. But technically, God can do it without those two things. Now, what God cannot make a man without is the will of God. He can't make a man that won't get in the will of God and stay there. Does that make sense? Now, Moses apparently understood that God would take him and use him to deliver Israel. And so at 40 years old, kills an Egyptian, makes the commitment, and sallies forth thinking that he had a handle on everything and that it's going to happen now. I can feel it in my bones. And it didn't work out at all. Moses wound up tucking his tail and running so he wouldn't go to prison and be executed. Right? Now look, folks, it's important to understand that the will of God is central. Every man's a failure outside the will of God. Every lost guy's a failure. He's never been in the will of God one day in his life. Right? Now get back to that proportion. Think about Moses at 40. Thinks he's getting in the will of God, thinks he's in the will of God, and he's not. Okay? Well, at 25, you're 25, Moses 40. You're 25, though. Because that's a third of the way through your life, roughly speaking. Maybe it's 30, okay. But at 25 or 30, your childhood hardships are no longer an excuse. And at 25 or 30, your parents are not responsible for your failure. You say, but my mom, but your mom nothing. They're not responsible any longer. You're a grown man. You got to take the burden, bear it, and go on. At 25 or 30, your parents cannot deliver you success. And at 25 or 30, you either grow past the Egyptians or you get mired in with them. Okay? Now, starting at 40, Moses, third of the way through his life, he begins an engagement in a battle that will carry him through the rest of his life. And that is a battle to stay centered in the will of God. And there are dangers with the will of God. The danger, first of all, is that you would not apprehend it. A lot of folks spend their allotted 75 or 80 or 90 years in this life, and they're never in the will of God one day in their lives. You now live in a generation of Christians that, beyond being saved, they largely abide totally out of the will of God because they don't apprehend it. It's never taught to them. They never see it. Some that were raised in church, and everybody can point to somebody they know like this, somebody that's raised in church and got saved young or relatively young, and then get out in life, they turn 40, or they turn 25 or 30 and decide to go their own way, and they just simply don't appreciate the will of God. So they go do their own thing and they're out of the will of God. Others endanger the will of God. That's what Moses did. Moses knew he was called to lead the children of Israel out. But by his impetuousness, by his presumption, by him taking the bull by the horns and getting in the wheelhouse and driving the ship his way down his channel, he endangered himself in the will of God because you just don't know how it runs. You don't know how the channel runs. And if the Lord doesn't lead you, you don't know what you're doing. At 25 years old, a third of the way through your life, where are you with respect to the will of God? Because you need to just see it. Moses didn't get in the will of God fully till he was 80. Now that's your 50. That's the Lord putting his hand on you when you're 50 years old, two-thirds of the way through your life, and saying, okay, I'm willing to use you now. Now this is how God built Moses. You understand? You got the prudence of family, you got the assistance of the heathen, then you got the will of God. Now there's more to come. I want you to see something else that he used. Look in Exodus chapter 2, back to there. Exodus chapter 2. You have to be a little bit intrigued by this 40, 40, 40, 25, 25, 25 thing. In chapter 2, verse 13, and when he went out the second day, behold, two men of the Hebrews strove together and said to him that did the wrong, wherefore smitest thou thy fellow? And he said, who made thee a prince and a judge over us? Intendest thou to kill me as thou killedst the Egyptian? And Moses feared and said, surely this thing is known. Now when Pharaoh heard this thing, he sought to slay Moses, but Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh, dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. Now there's something you have to face here, and a lot of us have faced it at various times, and I hope it doesn't cost anybody a third of their life. But one of the things that made Moses, one of the things that, if you're using building blocks, one of the things that God built into Moses, that he built him on, was the reaping for errors. His parents put some stuff into him. The heathen put some positive enough stuff into him. And you've got to figure out the will of God, or if you don't figure out the will of God, nothing gets figured out. But in the process of getting him to the burning bush and to the center of the will of God, he forced him to reap for errors. There in chapter 2, verse 12 and 13, he kills the Egyptian. And killing that Egyptian cost Moses exactly another third of his life. Boy, he reaped for that error. The indication would be that God had maybe had intentions, I'm not sure, of using Moses, earlier than he did. But Moses, by jumping the gun and killing the Egyptian, now God had to wait till this Pharaoh died so he can kind of be forgotten, and got to do some things for Moses out in the wilderness, and then Moses maybe can come back. Let the Hebrews forget some of the nonsense, and now I can bring him back, and now we can do it. But that process was another 40 years. That means that Moses spent two-thirds of his life reaping for errors. In the second part of his life in Midian, he had to leave Egypt because Pharaoh was going to kill him. And so for the next 40 years, he reaped the errors that he reaped for his error in killing the Egyptian. And then he went into the ministry from there and proceeded to administrate Israel's reaping for their errors. You need to think about that. The last two-thirds of Moses' life were spent reaping errors. One-third of it was reaping his own. And the useful part of his ministry, the usefulness part, was spent helping Israel reap for theirs. Welcome to the ministry. The will of God is something you shouldn't get flippant about. Because, all of us can point to somebody, I suppose. But I know folks that, made a mistake at 17 or 18, which is getting pretty close to a quarter of the way through our lives. Moses made his mistake at 40, which is about, 25 years old for us. I know folks that did something stupid at 25, and they're still reaping it today, 25 years later. See, there are mistakes in life, young folks, that you can make. young, it'll cost you for a long time. For a long time. You shouldn't be flipping about those things. An abortion goes a long way down through life. Boy, allowing yourself to be defiled, getting hooked up with the wrong person, can cost you and your children a long time down the road. And I don't know, it's depressing to think that somebody would spend an entire 2/3 of their life useless before God. In the first case, because they're just in the wrong spot and God's getting them ready. In the second third, because they made such a mistake that God couldn't use them for another 40 years. Man, folks, Moses didn't get used till he was 80. 2/3 of the way through life. Which ought to give some older folks here some joy, because that doesn't mean that God's done with you because you're 45 years old. Doesn't mean because you turned 40 this last year that, God's done with you. I guess God can't use me. Don't be stupid. If he used Moses at 80, he can use you at 40. Right? Okay, look. 2/3 of Moses' life is spent reaping errors. First of all, his own, and then those that were not his own. I mean, he spent the last 40 years of his life leading a rebellious, stubborn, stiff-necked people through the wilderness. And with God smacking them every time they made a mistake. And Moses just kept having to go back again and again. Now, he reaped for some of his own too there, by the way, because he smote the rock when he should have spoken to it, and so he got to stay on the other side of Jordan, down the other side. But largely, that last 40 years were spent reaping errors of somebody else. Now, the danger about reaping your own errors is that you might faint and fade and give up because you're so disgusted with yourself. Don't do that. The thing with being involved in reaping other sins or watching them reap them is that you can get bitter and resentful about it. And so you have a bunch of people that all they can do when they talk about church is be bitter about the brethren. The pastor that done me wrong. They have horror stories about the brethren and churches they've been in and stuff like that. Well, Moses spent 2/3 of his life reaping for errors. It's not a bunch of fun, is it? You know, there's just nothing romantic about it. Somehow, it's hard to put that on a t-shirt and sell it. Somehow, it just doesn't seem something like Eagle Brook would do. But the truth of the matter is that one of the things that built Moses as a man that God was able to use was the fact that he had to suck it up and reap for his own errors and then be a part of reaping for other people's errors. So, welcome to the ministry. You're going to have to bear somebody else's burdens. I think there's a verse about that in the New Testament somewhere. It's just that it maybe hadn't been presented quite like this before. You know what I'm saying? It's part of what makes you. Now, there's something else here that I should point out. And we've danced around it the whole time here. In fact, we've kind of talked about it, but just haven't named it. There's also the issue of long dry spells. Moses dies at 120. He's 40 years in Egypt till Exodus 2. Then he's 40 years in Midian till Exodus 3. Long dry spells. 2/3 of his life, long dry spells, where it's like nothing's going on. It must have felt to Moses like his entire life was crawling by and nothing's going on. At least when he was young in Egypt, you know, he's going to school, probably athletic competitions and probably hunts with Pharaoh's, you know, generals and stuff and recreational stuff like that. Apparently Moses was quite the man with those sort of things, but so that might have been exciting and all those things. Boy, you get out there with Jethro's sheep, even though Jethro gave you his daughter to marry and you love her and you're happy with her and you have kids by her and all those sort of things, standing around with a shepherd's crook watching sheep graze and dodging sheep exhaust for 40 years must seem, for the man who had the letter jacket in Egypt and knew that God had intended to use him to lead the children of Israel out and was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, he must have stood there and leaned on that shepherd's crook and said, I cannot believe that my life has gone this route. I can't believe that I'm standing here 30 years deep in a marriage. I've been Jethro's shepherd for 30 years, his son-in-law. I love him and I love my wife and I love my family. I just can't believe how my life's turned out. What a stinking waste, what a stinking loser I am. And it's a long dry spell. Nothing happened, nothing going on. Sheep pooping, you know, once in a while having to chunk a rock at a coyote to run them off. But other than that, nothing of any consequence spiritually going on. You can't read anywhere in there where Moses was praying. You don't read anywhere in there that he's winning souls. It's just day after day, just, you know, it's a drag. It's a drag. That's funny because you leave Exodus 2 and Moses is being the shepherd, and it's only a month, few months after that, that Moses turns to God and says, I can't handle all this burden that you've laid upon me. I have to have help. Suddenly he's not bored anymore. It's just funny. It goes that fast, the tides turn that fast. But long dry spells. You ever had a long dry spell? You ever spend a few months, maybe even a couple of years, wondering if God's done with you? Because Moses did. There was 80 years involved. 80 years involved. Christian life. I appreciate chick comics. I like them. But every day in the Christian life is not an adventure. It's a drag. Just like the rest of life. You know, I'm bored. Nothing going on. Nothing romantic happening. I don't hear the angels sing. I don't hear the choirs. I don't hear the orchestral music. I wish my life had a soundtrack. Nothing's going on. Long dry spells. Mundane, monotonous. Make the money. Pay the bills with the money. Spend money I don't have, but I'll make it up later. And, you know, one tax day leads to another tax day, which leads to another tax day. And it's been years. Long dry spells. What did Moses do with that 40 years in Midian? He made a living, dodged sheep exhaust, you know, leaned on his shepherd's crook, threw a rock at a coyote, raised a family, reaped his crop. He waited. Now, be careful with waiting. Like I said this morning, you got to seek the Lord. You got to desire to hear his voice, right? But there's an awful lot of waiting. Just because nothing exciting has happened in your Christian life in the last 2 weeks doesn't mean God's done with you. Moses spent 80 years. It took 80 years for God to build Moses to the point where he's got him on the ground, on his face, kicked off his shoes and said, okay, I have this for you to do. Moses' response was, no, not me. Get somebody else. So don't complain when he says, okay, go do this. He said, oh, no, not that. Come on. I deserve a bigger promotion than that. I've waited all these years. No, you better stick with what he tells you to do. One other thing I'd show you, this will be real fast. Chapter 3, verse 1. Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. He led the flock to the backside of the desert. Came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb. The angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of the bush, of a bush. He looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush, Moses, Moses. I'd like to point out to you that one of the things that you should add to the list of things that God pays attention to in making a Moses is the interests of his heart. Moses has been, you know, in his mind, it's likely in his mind, that he felt he had been unnecessarily, you know, shoved to the side when God could have used him. Here I was, 40 years old, young, strong, I had my letter jacket, best educated I've ever been, strong as a bull, supple as a whip. I know I could have led those folks out. And why didn't God do it? I don't know. I don't know. I know that I've been here. I know that I've been here for 40 years. I love my wife, I love my father-in-law, and I love my kids. And there's a couple of sheep here I even like. But it's nowhere, not where I thought I'd wind up. And yet, when there was a bush on the side of the mountain that wouldn't be burned, Moses says, I got to go find out what that is. His interest of heart. When you become disinterested in the things of God, it's a bad sign. It may be a sign that the Lord can't reach you because he sends you a signal and you don't respond. You know what I mean? I'm sure that the Lord shouted in Moses' ear just as he raised that sword to smite that Egyptian. I bet he was saying, nope, 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 nope. And he went ahead anyway, and so 40 years go by. And the next signal, there's no indication of any signal after that. Next signal, there's a bush that's been burning for 45 minutes. Now it's been burning for an hour and a half. How does a bush burn for an hour and a half? Honey, I got to go see what that's about. Would you watch the sheep for me for just a little while? I'll leave the dogs behind for you, but I got to go find out what's going on. You know, when you lose interest, it's not a good thing. How will the Lord get a hold of your heart if you ain't interested anymore? That's what makes Laodicea so stinking bad. There's a lot of folks just don't care. Well, God wrote the Bible. How long has it been since you suffered conviction? Oh, yeah. Wasn't that a good sermon? I preached a sermon for somebody, and somebody in the church was right in the middle, and nobody, and I didn't know it, right in the middle of their marriage completely being shattered. And somebody who knew of the thing, it turns out that I preached this message, not this message, but preached the message that I was preaching. And I mean, it landed right in the center of the lap of that family. I didn't even know. Somebody went to the wife who was the problem and said, well, so what did you think of that sermon? Like that. It's not a good sign. Not a good sign. I bet if you go back to some of the most miserable days of your life and most backslidden points, I bet you'll find that part of the problem was your attitude. Wasn't that a good, wasn't that a blessing this morning, that message? Yeah, it's okay. Can we go to Wendy's? You know what I'm saying? All right, so the making of Moses. Prudence of family, assistance of the heathen. The will of God. Reaping for errors. Long dry spells. And the interests of his heart. Those are the things that got him to the burning bush with his shoes off his feet, laying flat on his face, hearing the voice of God again. Let's bow our heads for prayer.